This is the podcast for July 27th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Mitt Romney's Anglo-Saxon Finishing School, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
Happy weekend.
We're trying another sound experiment this week.
We are.
Seeing, you know, we're trying to perfect, like Ann Coulter wanting to perfect Jewish people, we're trying to perfect our podcast. God, Ann Coulter, where the hell did that come from?
I don't know, but, you know, she's not black,
and neither
is Mitt Romney.
No, and she's the one who predicted that if they didn't, you know, nominate Chris Christie, if they nominated Mitt Romney, they would lose.
Yeah.
And boy, I tell you, Blue Gal, every week, your observation that he really doesn't want to be president.
I know. It's really true. He does not want to win, and he's proving it in London.
I know. I'm sure I'm ripping this off from somebody else, but he's becoming the Max Bialystock of from the producers.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You know what? If I produce a flop, if I fuck up as president, if I fail, actually I'll score a lot more money and endorsements and get a lot richer than if I actually won the damn thing and had to govern this country.
But you know what proved to me that I'm right this week, that where I just went, oh, yeah, this is so not going to happen. Because
was it me
really
telling you that you were right, being that I'm a patriarch? Remember,
I'm no,
a patriarch, and I validated your point of view. No, that wasn't it? Well, I can't even imagine what it might have been.
It was that they Fox News completely let Charles Krauthammer off the leash.
Yeah.
And he said, look, I've just run out of adjectives. This is so horrible. I can't even begin to describe how bad this is. He screwed it up. And that to me is a sign. Fox News doesn't want him to win. And I wouldn't either if I was Fox News. It's much more profitable to bash Obama for 4 more years. So
it is. He's a pinata.
Yeah.
And
so
they hit him, you know, ratings go up. So
yeah, so if the real motivation of the Republican electorate is Obama hate, you want more of that, not less. Mm-hmm. So it really is, I think, a conscious effort on the part of the Republican Party to leave things the way they are because everything is working for them this way.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, Driftglass, the New York Times devoted 3 pages to Mitt Romney. Actually, the New York Times is devoting more time and energy to Mitt Romney's Olympic horse than Mitt Romney is.
Yeah. I mean, the man punked his own wife.
I wanted to ask you about that. If I had a horse at the Olympics, would you watch it on TV, Driftglass?
Honey, if you were in the biathlon competition at the local elementary school, I would come see it. You know, it was so weird to watch this sort of. There used to be this thing called, I think, a see-through man, and it was this plastic.
Oh, yeah,
model,
yeah.
Transparent cutaways. And you could sort of thumb through the pages and watch the organs sort of build
up. And they were on sort of cellophane. And you could flip it over and see the lungs and flip it over and see the backbone. And, see all the organs of the body that way, yeah.
And you can actually watch Romney's processing unit try to come up with a way to pretend that he doesn't care or that he's trying to reconcile the fact that he took a –
$77,000 tax deduction on that horse.
Tax deduction for his dancing ballet horses.
Yep, yep.
And that he touted them as the thing that gives his wife's life meaning.
Yeah, well, it's helped her with her disease.
Her MS.
Yeah, terrible disease. It's debilitating and awful.
And I've never heard of dancing horses being the solution to MS, especially when someone else does all the work, but okay.
She rides horses. She does ride horses.
Absolutely.
And I know from my stepson who passed away several years ago, but he had severe cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. And horse riding as therapy is an amazing thing to watch. And I will tell you that I know that dressage horses and so forth are getting a really bad rap this week. But the people who actually do equine therapy are amazing people, and we really shouldn't denigrate their work because they're unbelievable.
To be clear, I'm not denigrating their. My uncle, who is still around and is very conservative, he's a very sweet guy, and I love him dearly. Used to have city kids up to his ranch.
Yeah.
Every summer. And the transformation of someone who's been in an urban environment their whole lives to spending a month riding horses.
Mm-hmm.
Really good, and caring for a large animal is profound. No, it's not that at all. It's that that sport, she's not riding the horse in the Olympics.
No.
Someone else is. So she's not participating in any way other than as an interested observer. But grant her all of that. Grant her all of those other things, even though Mitt Romney took it as a business deduction instead of a medical deduction. All right, grant them all that. They finally show up at the Olympics, which, granted, for the Romney family, is just another weekend abroad. But for everyone else on Earth, an arrival at the Olympics, whatever your sport is the apotheosis of your life. This is the high point of your life. You've
devoted
years and years and years of practice and focus. Whatever I don't care if it's, you know, synchronized ping pong. I don't care if it's arrows, if it's fencing, whatever it is, you've worked your ass off to get there. And so everyone else on Earth views this as the apex of athletic competition and excellence. What does Mitt Romney do? Fuck it. My wife will watch. I'm going to be off doing some other shit.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? And that's how little it means to him, because it's just another weekend. It's just another business trip abroad, and he has to do it, and he has to put in the time, but it's no big thing. Now, I understand he doesn't want to talk about dressage horses anymore. If I were painting myself into a rich, dumbass oligarch corner and becoming a laughingstock, as he clearly understands he's becoming, I wouldn't want to dwell on it either. But he's no grace to the man. He can't say it's an awesome thing, it's a terrific thing, with any enthusiasm. All he can do is, I'm not going to be there. My wife will be there. That's sort of her thing, but I'll be doing something else about the Olympics.
And that means that there's something really fundamentally wrong with Mitt Romney's personality. Yes. I mean, just he has shown this week that he doesn't have his robot is missing a empathy cog.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. He just can't. He can't fake it.
Yeah.
He's incapable of faking, you know, he's incapable of faking sincerity.
And I also think he is incapable of seeing the world in anything other than a business model.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're living in the boardroom and everyone's saying yes to you and you're the only stockholder,
mm-hmm.
everything comes down to, we don't know if London's ready yet or not. And it's not about the people. It's about, these mechanical business model things, and he's talking to the board.
Right.
No, he's not. He's talking to everybody, and he doesn't get that.
Mm-hmm.
And a politician needs to be able to talk to people
mm-hmm.
about them, and he's not capable of doing that. He's proven that this week.
You know what it reminds me of just a little bit, and this is, I realize, is a bit of a stretch. It reminds me of the that long review of The Phantom Menace on YouTube.
Oh, the red letter media
review of the movie and of George Lucas.
Yeah.
The fact that nobody says no to George Lucas anymore. The reason this movie was crap is that George Lucas got rid of everybody who ever said no to him.
Yeah.
And was given complete, and they showed cuts of his horribly uncomfortable staff laughing at his terrible jokes, nodding enthusiastically at his atrocious ideas, because this is George fucking Lucas, for God's sakes.
Well, and him saying, well, and watching the screening of it.
Yeah.
And everyone sort of looking at like, oh my God, this is bullshit. This is awful.
So
you can see
bad.
It on their faces, and they're saying, well, we really can't recut it because it all hangs on everything else hangs on everything else. And so if we cut any part of it, it'll fall apart. No, it doesn't have a storyline, people.
Right.
and it's the same way with Romney. It's like if he changes and starts talking as if he's not a board member, then he's not Romney anymore, somehow.
He's
stuck. Yeah.
Well, and this is where George Lucas said, after he saw what a complete shit he had taken on his own franchise,
mm-hmm.
came up with, well, it's just, it's a new way of narrative storytelling, and it's blending it, and it's almost poetic in the way. No, it's bad.
And it's a new way of selling McDonald's toys, which is really what he wanted to do with those early chapters of the movie.
But watching and having been in senior executive meetings.
Oh yeah.
With
yeah.
people like this.
Yep.
I will go so far as to say that this is not alien to my experience.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It is uncannily close to the George Lucas model, where he exists on his own ranch,
yep.
in his own bubble, doing his own thing, and as long as there's no interaction with the outside world or it's tightly controlled, mm-hmm. He's fine. But the minute he actually starts getting his hands all over the creative process, and you put a camera on all of the underlings around him whose job is to be as fawning and as deferential as possible, mm-hmm. you see how he's building his own persona right in front of you. And that persona works great in Hollywood. It works great in the boardroom. Giant egomaniacal assholes do very well in situations like that.
The other thing that happens in those kind of situations, too, is that everything that is brought to you at all times is perfect. Mm-hmm. And yeah. so when someone brings you something from out of that world, like Brian Williams asks you a question that's off script,
yeah.
and you haven't been prepared for in any way, which, you know, this is such a huge fail on the part of Mitt Romney's staff to not prepare him for here's how you're going to answer everything mm-hmm. and have those kind of discussions. But I remember working for an organization that had a board of directors.
Yeah.
And I worked for a junior executive within that organization. He had a document that had come down from the board of directors and he wanted a copy of it. I was his I wasn't his secretary. I was an assistant in some other department, but I was asked to make a copy of this document for this junior executive. And the junior executive came over to the photocopy machine with me, instructed me to remove the staple from this document and feed it through the copier, and then staple it again so that the staple lined up with the staple holes. I'm serious.
Right.
Lined up so that it did not look like it had been stapled more than once. Because this is going to the board of directors.
Don't you get it? This is going to the board.
Yeah, and I got that. Exactly. That was, and he was standing there, you know, making 10 times the amount of money I was, 20 times, 30 times the amount of money I was, telling me that the staple holes had better line up.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't nasty about it, but he was instructing me, you need to line up these staples because this is going to the board.
Oh,
and that's Mitt Romney's world. Everything that's handed to him
has to be,
and that's why his standards for the London Olympics are, well, you know, they're having these problems and these problems and these problems, and that means they're not ready. Yeah,
and it's expected that the boss gets to be a dick. Well, what about this? This doesn't look very good. This kind of sucks. This is kind of broken. And I got the feeling that from Mitt Romney's interaction with a Pennsylvania pastry company.
Yeah.
To Mitt Romney's interaction with the British
people. The city of London, yeah.
His reaction was that of a dickish CEO.
Yeah.
Going, yeah, well, I guess it's okay. But, you know, the staple holes could have been lined up a little bit better.
Yeah,
and
right.
Can't you just say something nice? Well, no. Because if I say something
nice. Because I'm a manager, yeah.
You won't know who's in charge here.
Yep,
so
exactly.
So I get to be a dick, and your job is to shut up and smile and go, ha-ha, good point, boss. Yep. I'll work harder next time.
Right.
And that's
right.
And speaking of people who don't know how to handle going off script.
Yeah, we need to change gears to Tom Friedman.
We're going to talk a little bit about Tom Friedman. You want to talk about that now?
That's fine. I want you to acknowledge the person that sent this to you because we had never heard of it before.
Mm-hmm. Well, the person who sent it to me was a commenter.
Okay. At your blog.
Hit and miss.
Yeah, okay.
At my blog.
Thank you very much for sending this to us.
This is just wonderful. If you go over to my blog, driftblast.blogspot.com, and look at a post called A Good Scent from a Strange Mountain, which is a Robert Olin Butler's wonderful short story collection, it's amazing.
This is an interview that Tom Friedman did to pimp his book.
He did. He was on this awful book tour to pimp his awful book, Touting Centrism, which I know comes as a surprise to regular listeners.
And the title of this book is That Used to Be Us, and it's about, you know, American failure in light of the wonderful world of globalization, which Thomas Friedman loves.
Has spent his entire career touting.
Yeah.
And
so
come home to roost. And Tom Friedman's political analysis in a very short shorthand form is if only there were a third party who was reasonable and centristy and would combine both a grand bargain with a good social mission with reinvestment. And at every turn in the American media, shrill little bloggers like me and pretty much everyone else below the who's not in the circle jerk of elite media that in which he travels, has said very pointedly, the third party leader that Tom Friedman is describing is Barack Obama.
Exactly.
The third party that he is describing is the Democratic Party.
The centrist, moderate Republican president is Barack Obama.
Everything he has proposed is straight out. I don't happen to disagree. I don't happen to agree with a lot of it. But the fact of the matter is the person that Tom Friedman wants as the leader of the country to implement all of his policies, which he somehow thinks we can just rally ourselves. If only we had this person in charge who believes in all these awesome things, they would magically be able to rally a majority and then get all this stuff done. Because when you're Tom Friedman and you're a billionaire and you're a fucking moron, you can just make shit up about how the political process works to suit your preconceived notions. But the point being that over and over again, people all the way up to Paul Krugman have said, you know, one of my colleagues at the New York Times is apparently drunk all the time because the person he says he wants is the president.
Yeah.
The reason Friedman can't say that is because he is in the business of selling third party bullshit.
Exactly.
He's a snake oil salesman who sells this no labels, third way, radical center nonsense.
And don't forget, big ideas, too.
Yes, big terrible ideas. Big, awful ideas. And so he goes from Meet the Press to the Charlie Rose Show to other friendly venues.
But he wasn't on the Charlie Rose Show on this tape that you have at your blog. No. He was talking to
Kim Hill.
World Media. He was talking to New Zealand.
A New Zealand radio show host for an hour. And he was on there to pimp his book. And again, this is the profile of a bloated, hackish, really talentless boob who, for reasons that passeth all understanding, has been given a job for life at the New York Times and who's surrounded by these fawning, obsequious colleagues who will never ask him blunt questions about his big, stupid ideas.
Well, so and also about his motivation for having these big, stupid ideas.
Yes. You know, by the way, so he's on this show, and seriously, go listen to this. It's 50 minutes long.
But right. If you go to the last 15 minutes of it, you'll hear just Tom Friedman just loses it, just completely emotionally loses it in this interview.
He loses it because she asks him, so you're a rich guy, aren't you?
After he's talking about we need austerity and we need to increase the retirement age, and we need to do it because we need to pay for other safety nets that, and he really is, as you have said about David Brooks too, it's a Parcheesi board, and human beings are just these little pieces of plastic with a little knob on the top of it that he's going to move around to make the world look pretty. And Tom Friedman and David Brooks do this. They take human beings, they fly over at a million miles above and move
Davos,
things around, and it works. Look, it'll work.
From Davos to Aspen to the TED Talks,
they
surround themselves with plutocrats like themselves. They are never, ever in the presence of a person who will ask them a hard question. And parallel to this, I was present on the one occasion when David Brooks was asked a hard question, and he completely folded up and started lying. And it was just astonishing to watch him complete, because he shit himself in public because he had no experience with anyone asking him a hard question, because his pal David Gregory and his pal Charlie Rose have sworn a blood oath never to ask him about his past, never to ask him about all the shit he's gotten wrong, never to ask him about the crap he just makes up in order to invent a centrist position that also happens to be his own position.
Well, if you don't mind, Driftglass, I'd like to just step back half a step and point out that the other thing that they are never asked about is how they are able to manipulate economics and argue for economic changes that will have no impact on their personal lives.
Exactly.
This is what we need to do, and this is going to come up a lot with all of our listeners, I'm sure, if they get involved in a political conversation with a centrist or a conservative, which is, well, you liberals, you just want to punish success.
Right.
And it's really important. This is going to be Mitt Romney's broken record for the next 2 months, which is, people want to bring my wealth into the conversation. This is exactly what happened with Tom Friedman, too.
Yeah.
Want to bring my wealth into the conversation and not discuss how much money I give to my church and how good a person I am. And they just want to punish me for being rich.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mitt Romney, I found out this week, if you take the last 8 presidents, including Obama, and combine their wealth, Mitt Romney has 2 times that amount of money. Yeah. I mean, that's how rich Mitt Romney is.
He's really rich.
That's not the issue. The issue is that Mitt Romney is that rich, and he wants all of us who have paid into Medicare to accept a coupon instead of a defined benefit. Right. And he wants a tax cut for people as wealthy as he is to decimate the social safety net. So
all based on a crackpot economic theory.
Called trickle down. That has already been proven wrong.
We spent from the Depression to the 80s, basically, proving one theory of economics, which is, if you tell banks, here's all the shit you can't do, and make sure they can't do it. And if you have, frankly, a very high marginal tax rate that forces people to reinvest in their country and their companies, if you have large government outlays in terms of infrastructure, education, et cetera, and if you have strong labor unions, everybody wins. And this is the thing about defining a narrative. It is true that a lot of American wealth has been created by the innovation of brilliant people and hardworking people. I would never take away the hard work and sweat equity it takes to open and run a small business or a large business or to invent some new awesome thing. That's simply not true. But it is also true. At the same time, it is also true that you need hydrogen and oxygen to make water. You need government investment in infrastructure, education, research, and energy. And what was true in the 50s and 60s and 70s was cheap labor, was cheap energy, was cheap timber, was cheap minerals, was cheap everything, was abundant clean water, abundant clean air that we burned through like crazy.
Yeah. And I want to bring up 2 things about that. Uh-huh. One is a quote that U.S. Uncut had on Facebook last night, and it's from Will Rogers, and it's about trickle down. He said, "The money was all appropriated for the top in the hopes that it would trickle down to the needy. Mr. Hoover didn't know that money trickles up. Give it to the people at the bottom, and the people at the top will have it before night anyhow." But at least it will have passed through the poor fellow's hands. And so this trickle down thing, I mean, that to me is the best argument against trickle down I've ever read. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to bring up, and not to get depressed here, but Gawker has been asking people to write in their unemployment stories. And I knew when I read this I was going to get depressed, so I've limited myself to reading it because, as most of our listeners know, you're unemployed right now. You've been unemployed since last September, and this is hard.
Well, and let me add one small thing to that.
Yeah.
I have an unnaturally huge amount of knowledge about labor market, about unemployment, about how people get hired.
That's part of your job, of your career arc has been getting people employed, which is ironic. But
part of the problem I face, not with finding a job, is that to stay current in one of my areas of professional interest, I have to read what I call unemployment porn.
Yeah,
which
right.
is this sort of thing, which just I already know it's true.
Yeah,
but reading it just to stay current with what's going on depresses the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Because it's depressing. Anyway, that was just a little.
Anyway, but I had, this is related directly to what you were saying about the planet, which is I was reading these stories mostly of young people, because Gawker's readership is young, of young people scraping together money to get gas money to drive to another state so they can apply for a job, or interview for a job, you know, a lot of really desperate stories of people selling everything they have on eBay and finding out, oh, look, somebody bought something I own for $100 that will pay my groceries for the week, you know, and living that hand to mouth. It's very deeply upsetting to read this stuff. However, the thing that upset me even more than that was there were some extraordinarily well-meaning, good human people on the comment threads for these unemployment stories. And it was a wonderful thing to see because one person wrote in and said, oh, the lady from Indiana who wrote her unemployment story should email me because I'm hiring and I don't care if you've been unemployed for 2 years. I would like to talk to her, which mm-hmm. fantastic makes yeah, you feel absolutely. Hopeful, makes you feel like, wow, the internet is doing something good. Uh-huh. There were a number of good people on these comment threads saying, you know, I want to help people find jobs. If you're really looking for a job and you're able to relocate, come up to Canada and work in the tar sands area.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, oh, my God, what do we do now? Because mm-hmm. the tar sands area is going to kill the fucking planet. Mm-hmm. What are we doing? And the woman from Houston, who is the lesbian mayor of Houston, was on Colbert. And mm-hmm. bless her heart for being on Colbert. And, you know, she was saying, Houston has jobs, people. Come on down. And they're all in the oil industry. Of course they are. Mm-hmm. And I know people who live in Houston, and it's a 3-hour commute, and everybody has an SUV. And because I have a relative who works in that industry, and he has said to me to my face over dinner, you know, gas prices can't go high enough for me.
Yeah.
Not because that will create an impetus for people to conserve, but
or
because
a green energy market.
No.
Yeah, no, because that's money in my pocket.
Yeah, and no one will ever stop buying gasoline. This is never going to end until we run out or until the planet burns up. And we've had this week. I mean, you and I were driving to Batman one afternoon this week. Uh-huh. And by the way, one of the advantages to not living in a major metropolitan area is you can go to the movies for $5.
Yes, you can. Yes.
$5 is all we paid to go to see Batman. But we were driving to Batman, and there's this bank sign that says it's 105 degrees outside. And I just looked down at my lap and said, well, it's a new normal. Yeah. This is it. We're just going to have to burn up the planet. And I thank God Mitt Romney went to London because it distracted me from the planet dying for 5 whole minutes. But and I just wonder about our future and the future for our kids. And Mitt Romney doesn't give a shit about any of the Republican Party is in bed with the oil companies, and we've got to stop them. I mean, it really is to the point where it's that important.
I get kind of nihilistic when I hear about weather change, global mm-hmm. temperature change, global climate change deniers
yeah.
being given, continue to be given, treated as if they're not criminally insane.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you notice that all the people that, you know, a lot of the think tanks that churn out this garbage, because if we can create a controversy, then we can pretend it's not settled.
Yeah.
Are the same people who took money from the tobacco industry in the 80s and 90s.
Absolutely.
70s and
80s. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And they make the same argument, the libertarian argument. Well, it's not bad for you. The science is in doubt, and mm-hmm. the scientists disagree. And well, the science is in dispute. Well, whether the science is in dispute or not, it's about freedom. And then you die.
And that's the whole gun lobby argument, too. Yeah, same thing.
And I would very much like to make the bargain with our climate change deniers that, you know what, I think this is going down a road where it's exactly the same tobacco logic. You continue to pretend the science is in dispute because it's inconvenient to pretend otherwise. You continue to smoke. And you continue to pretend that it's about freedom, and you continue to smoke. And then eventually the final argument is, well, it's too late now, so let's just continue to smoke. I would like to make a bargain with the climate change deniers that once it becomes apparent that this is true and it's very close to being too late and you can no longer deny it, you are unfit to be a member of my species any longer, because you have participated in a global criminal conspiracy to destroy my planet. And giggled the whole fucking way there. Listen to nobody but haters, nobody but lunatics, because they told you your bigotry was patriotic. And they told you your paranoia was science. Fine. But when we get to the point where it's no longer deniable, very much like Iraq is no longer deniable, trickle-down economics are no longer deniable, there has to be some really brutal consequences for people who went along with the lies, went along with the party, went along with the status quo right up until it was too late and then said, well, fuck it. And this time it can't be we'll put on tri-corner hats and call ourselves the Tea Party, and David Gregory will pretend that we aren't really Republicans. It will grant us a whole new access to the American media. No. This time there has to be real, real severe consequences for people who participated willingly in a global criminal conspiracy to fuck up my planet.
There was a real consequence for the tobacco companies. I mean, the tobacco...
Yeah, exactly.
The tobacco industry had to pay a crap load of money to the states for that.
And then...
For the oil companies, that's a drop in the bucket. It's always a drop in the bucket.
Well, and oil companies are going to have a product that people are going to continue to use. And the think tanks, this is the point. The oil companies, sure, tobacco is rectifiable, okay? You kill a billion people, and eventually people figure this out, and people die. It's not something that affects the entire world and everyone else who lives in it. Mm-hmm. Secondhand smoke accepted, and all those other consequences accepted. Energy consumption of carbon-based energy wrecks it for everybody.
Yep.
And the other part about the tobacco industry is that the think tanks that gave them their intellectual framework went right on being a libertarian source.
Absolutely. They went for weapons.
And other than squaring off with firearms and settling this once and for all in a big old bloody civil war, which nobody wants, there has to be some incredibly painful consequences to being a fucking Republican.
And I don't know when things are going to get this bad, but at some point in the next 50 to 60 years, things are going to get that bad.
Yes.
And we're going to have to nationalize energy, period.
Well, this is what bothers me about that. There's something other than, you know, gross planetary recklessness on the part of corporations. Mm-hmm. These corporations are, you know, if you think of them as entities, they think 50, 60, 70, 100 years out.
But corporations are people, Driftglass.
They are. Well, and this is what, you know, what creeps me out is the little science fiction tickle in my brain that, you know, our very, very rich people and very, very large corporations and very, very powerful elites have access to information that we don't.
Yep.
And they know that we're screwed. So what they're doing is they're preparing lifeboats. They're buying up land. They're buying up property. They're buying up fresh water. They're buying up the supplies necessary to last through a global drought that will last 15 years, 20 years, and kill off lots of people.
Yeah.
And the rest of us boobs are down here fighting for scraps while they essentially loot the planet, loot it of its resources, and build themselves an entirely separate culture, walled off from everyone else, where people who are elite, it's when worlds collide. There's a spaceship that will take you to a world that will not be destroyed. In this case, the Cayman Islands and South Pole and other places. And the elites are deciding who gets to come.
Yeah.
And the rest of us will be left fighting for scraps. And it is the mask of the Red Death. It is the elites walling themselves off from the population and letting the plague burn itself out while they party.
Well, and before we depress our audience too much, one of the things that has carried me through this week is how many times we have been here before.
Yes.
Now, global warming is something that's new, but the desperate sense that the world is coming to an end has happened over and over again.
Yes.
I'm reading a novel now called The Impeachment of Abraham Lincoln. And it's a pretty good novel where is it? Here, it's right behind me. Hold on a minute.
Stephen Carter?
No, yeah, Stephen L. Carter.
Ah.
And it's a good read. the people that thought that the world was coming to an end when the war was over. I mean, the war's over, right? The North won. Mm-hmm. And there are still people saying, no, this is the apocalypse. Not mm-hmm. just in the South, but mm-hmm. all over the country were thinking, no, this is like... And in this book, Abraham Lincoln survives the assassination attempt, and there's still people saying, no, the world's coming to an end. Mm-hmm. The Depression, World mm-hmm. War II, mm-hmm. on and on and on. And one of the things...
Black Death, yeah.
The Black Death. Oh, yeah, we were talking about that this week. Everything goes back to the Canterbury Tales. Everything in the universe goes back to the Canterbury Tales. One of the things that depresses me again about this, though, is I was trying to count my blessings on this whole thing about the tar sands and realizing how much we have done in this country to improve the environment and realizing that most of that was done under Nixon.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah. You know, fluorocarbons, we've done a lot to cut yeah. back on fluorocarbons. Yeah. And I was thinking about the car that my dad drove compared to the car I drive. It's yeah. so much safer and so much more efficient and has airbags and has fuel efficiency built in. And yeah. we're now moving to hybrid cars and electric cars and slowly, much more slowly than we could have.
Well, the Cuyahoga River doesn't burst into flames.
Yeah, there are. Well, it might again, you know, but yeah. but we are, as you have said many times, Driftglass, these problems are fixable. We sure. fixed them in the past and we can fix them again, but it's going to take a lot of us screaming bloody murder to make it happen.
These are man-made problems.
They are.
And there are some man-made problems. You know, once you launch an all-out nuclear attack, that's pretty much it. You know, you live in the rubble of those consequences. But the key is, don't let that happen. And I am given enormous hope that from little tiny bloggers and activists and local people who work mm-hmm. with, you know, people at your church,
yeah.
who work their asses off for the less fortunate and
Absolutely.
The outcasts
Absolutely.
And the people that Jesus hung out with, to serious players on the global stage are trying really hard to push through using democratic consensus building means and lots of investment in science. Ways to get us the fuck off of fossil fuels,
mm-hmm,
and ways
mm-hmm.
to get us to a place where we don't despoil the environment beyond redemption.
Well, and I loved how even David Letterman went on board with this week and said, you know, we're screwed. If we screw the water supply, we're screwed. And I think he actually went darker than that. But, but you know, we can change things. We really can.
And that's what I get when I read my email,
mm-hmm.
and when I listen very carefully, because this is what liberals do. We actually do listen very carefully to what conservatives say and do and think and act and how they behave. We are to steal a phrase from David Brooks from the 80s, which was never true. He used to say conservatives are bilingual, that they have to understand conservatism and they have to understand what liberals really think and really believe, etc. Because we live in a liberal culture. Now, the liberals that people like David Brooks thinks about and people like Rush Limbaugh think about are fictional characters of their imagination for the most part. But liberals really do need to be bilingual. We understand liberalism because we're liberals, and we understand how hilariously cartoonish the caricatures of liberalism are in the media. But we also need to understand conservatives because they really are running the table. They really do run the show. They've strapped a bomb to their chest and say, we'll take this fucker out if we don't get everything we want. So we understand them. And at bottom, what really depresses me is how suicidal they are, how nihilistic they
mm-hmm.
are. They have no vision for the future other
yeah.
than freedom
yeah.
and no tyranny. We don't want tyranny. We want freedom. Well, yeah, okay. What happens when it all runs out? What happens when you can't breathe the air? What happens to your kids, man? What happens when, you know, gas is $10 a gallon and there's no alternative because we never bothered to spend the money to develop the alternative? What then? And the answer is generally, well, conservatives are old, bitter white men. They'll
yeah.
be dead. They don't care. And if something happens between now and then, they have 17 guns in the basement. They have a bunker mentality. They have a real, down in their bones, a real sense that, nah, we're fucking going out, man.
Yeah, and we'll seal up our house so we have our own air.
Yeah, well, I really think that as long as they make it to the grave comfortably, in luxury, they don't give a shit what happens to the future. You know, the future never did nothing for me.
Yeah.
So they are happy to spend the planet's resources to make their waning years cushy and comfortable. They're happy to rip the shit out of anybody who suggests that maybe we should think about the next generation and the generation after that and not use it all up right now. And any argument to the contrary is met with a gun or with people screaming about tyranny and socialism.
Or a very simplistic Jesus answer. You know, I think there is a aspect of fundamentalist Christianity that says, oh, you know, God gave us all this to just use up. So, you know, we're not going to be punished for hurting the planet because God loves us. So,
what do you mean, you know, that is fundamentalist Christianity.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
actually, John Shimkus, our current congressman who will not be our congressman after January, which excites me a lot. Oh, God.
You want to tell him who's
right? Do we want to talk about this? Do we want to go after shit on the Democratic Party right now because I'm so mad at them?
Let's take 1 minute and you explain why.
I'm so angry. Howard Dean needs to come back and take over the Democratic Party and start whipping some people because what has happened in Illinois is so awful.
In this district.
In these districts, because what has happened in central Illinois is a redistricting, which is going to happen, and it's written by the Combine, you know. The Chicago Combine with the downstate state legislatures. And what has happened is they have carved out what is a Democratic majority district around Springfield that goes all the way up to Bloomington Normal and includes four major universities. It goes all the way down to St. Louis. It's a little it's a kind of a crescent shaped district, and it's really funny how the district, I mean, it's so gerrymandered, but the district then has this little box that comes out and surrounds Springfield from, it's like a moon with a box perched on the inner curve of it.
What you mean is it's like the sign of Islam.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's a reverse crescent with a little box that has Springfield on it.
Here comes Sharia.
Okay, that's the 13th district now. Mm-hmm. And the 15th district is to the east of that and is a much bigger district in terms of geography, and that's farmland and that's Republican. And Shimkus, who is the congressman who went before a congressional hearing on global warming to say, and had ministers, he called ministers to the congressional hearing to explain how Noah was promised that the earth would not be destroyed. And he actually read the Bible verse from Noah. You know, we don't have to worry about global warming because of the rainbow that Noah was promised the earth would never be destroyed again.
Yep.
And, you know, as Stephen Colbert says, he didn't read how the world actually ends in the Bible, which is with fire and brimstone, right?
Yeah, fire next time. Yeah.
That's going to happen. Oh, yeah, that part of the Bible.
Don't tell Shimkus how it ends.
Yeah, really. He hasn't gotten there yet. Yeah. Well, so Shimkus is running in the 15th district, which is this farmland coal district. And he has received more money from the coal industry than anyone else in Congress, by the way.
Shimkus is an incumbent congressman. Shimkus has
been reelected
by my neighbors. And he's that fucking crazy. So
for a long time. Yeah. Uh-huh. And he is big coal. He is a coal industry sponsored properly. Congressman. Absolutely. Yep. So he's moving over and moving out of Springfield, and he's going to run in this farm district, the 15th district, which no longer includes Springfield. Mm-hmm. And just heads up, I'm hoping, and I'm certainly going to support, going to get a really good congressman in David Gill. David Gill's MD. He's very much in favor of Obamacare. He's right on all the right issues, and hopefully he's going to be our congressman next term.
let's be very clear. And the reason Mr. Gill is going to probably be elected is that I moved from Jan Schakowsky's liberal
That's
district
right. down to Springfield area, Illinois.
District.
And you
bringing my
by osmosis.
It's the drift glass bump, Lou Gal.
We hope so.
And you're welcome.
At any rate, he's a good guy, and I certainly hope he wins. This district now leans Democratic and yeah. was carried by Obama, and we'll just see how things unfold. But here's where I'm pissed at the Democratic Party. There, I can't remember her name now, but there's a woman running against Shimkus as the Democrat.
Ran unopposed, right?
This is the point. She ran unopposed for the Democratic primary for the new 15th district. Uh-huh. And she is an anti-abortion nut job. That is her single issue. Yep. She has pictures of dead baby fetuses on her website. Her husband.
They are rampant against a giant American flag, you should mention.
Oh, yeah. Her husband, and again, I'm sorry I can't remember her name. It's probably better that I not give her any more publicity. But her husband was the guy who ran the baby fetus ad on the Super Bowl. That's her husband. So she, whether she's a Democrat or Randall Terry, that's it, and her name. She's a registered nurse who, you know, loves life and wants anti-abortion, and here's pictures of dead baby fetuses on my congressional campaign website. Mm-hmm. When you click on it, that's what comes up. And, well, if you're offended by that, click on this link. I'll tell you how bad abortion is.
Uh-huh.
And
she's the competition.
She's the competition for Shimkus. And yes. She's what the Democratic Party has put up against Shimkus. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that the 15th district isn't going to respond positively to a pro-life message. They will. I mean, Shimkus is pro-life too. It's not that's just going to be the way that is. People are, for the most part, have been in the past moderate Republicans until a black guy put his hand on the Bible, right?
Right.
And actually, the counties that are in Shimkus's district went for McCain. Even though Obama's from Illinois. This is how bad things are. Okay, but...
Yeah, there's still a lot of a reconstruction, so...
Cannot tell me that this kind of thing would have gone on under the 50-state strategy.
No. Somebody would have been recruited.
Somebody would have been recruited who was not a fucking nut job. To represent the Democratic Party.
If for no other reason, make them spend. And it, see, here's it makes.
Put it a, make a primary to make yeah. wingnut, crazy, anti-abortion, baby fetus lady put up some real money. But she ran fucking unopposed.
And this is why.
In the primary.
This is why high school sports teams have varsity, junior varsity.
Absolutely.
Novice. You build your bench this way. You take some county commissioner or local business owner, or somebody who is moderate, even a moderate Republican, even somebody who would be considered a if you don't mind me saying so, an Obama Republican,
mm-hmm.
and put them in there and give them some money and let them lose.
Yeah, but
them stand up and make the case that
the Democratic Party is not fucking nuts.
Right. And have them, give me $120,000.
Yeah.
I'll run for goddamn Congress in that district.
Yeah.
I don't live there. But the point being, I'm tired of my party, parts of it. Parts of it are really good. Parts of my party I'm very proud of. But parts of my party are still terribly ashamed to be Democrat.
Yeah.
And terribly ashamed of standing up in public and saying, here's what I believe in. Like it or not, love me or not, whether you think I'm a fucking Marxist or not, I will debate you on every single point, and if I'm wrong, I'll admit it. But by God, I'm not ashamed to be a Democrat, and I'm willing to run in a very red district because that's where I live, and I happen to think it would be better run with a Democrat in Congress than a fucking Republican in Congress, period. And yet my party is still under that Rahm Emanuel, don't fight them where they live.
Yeah,
just focus on marginal districts and pour a lot of money into places and really just constrict the party and draw it downward and downward and tighter until it's just trench warfare.
Yeah, and put as many blue dogs in there as makes everybody happy. Yeah. And then when it comes down to real votes that have real consequences, you'll find out that they're not Democrats anyway. And I'm just tired of Democrats who are pretending to be Democrats. And this woman is one of them. And it's just got to stop. And I know we've talked about this before. This happens in Alabama a lot because Alabama is such a Republican state, so to speak. Mm-hmm. We could have a transformative election based on the Ryan budget. If the Democratic Party wanted to make this entire election in all 538 congressmen, and make it a referendum on the Ryan budget, this could be a transformative election.
Let's do it. Let's have 538 debates.
On the Ryan budget. And every Republican has to stand up and defend that.
Because you voted for it.
You voted for it. So, and a billboard that says, look, he voted yes on you getting a coupon for your Medicare.
Right. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine with me.
This could be, you know.
Going back to centrism. I just want to actually.
This is our last point.
Okay. Well, but I want my wife Blue Gal to do a thought experiment with me. Mm-hmm. Suppose this is the acid test for the media. Okay. We both know that Misters Mann and Ornstein have a wonderful book about how it's worse than you think.
Mm-hmm.
We've mentioned this
before.
Which
specifically blames the Republican Party for going crazy. Yeah.
Right. And they are both well-respected, scholarly, centrist, center-right in one case, analysts and academicians and think tankers who have been Beltway favorites for a really long time. If you saw them on television, you'd know who they were. And yet, their analysis that the Republican Party is the problem.
Yeah, and both sides don't. Both sides do not do this. Yeah.
And the media is a co-conspirator in the fantasy that both sides are always wrong about everything.
Norman Ornstein said this week, I was so proud of him for actually making that statement. The media is an unindicted co-conspirator in this problem. Yes. And then they were out of time all of a sudden.
Oh, we're out of time. Sorry, Norm, we're out of time. Can't talk about that anymore. Up next, a dog on a surfboard. Really? Okay. Well, I think we can cut away from that to cover the most important story of this generation, which is the collapse of our ability to govern ourselves because our journalism sucks. But okay, let's go with the dog on the surfboard. But the thought experiment is this. What would David Gregory, and I'll pick on him because he's so goddamn awful. He's so bad. But what would David Gregory or George Snuffleupagus or any of the other hosts of our national water cooler. These are the places we go as a, you know, non-cable locations where we go to have national conversations, serious national conversations about politics and culture and shit like that. Mm-hmm. All right. And they're all dominated by centrist goofs who, you know, play this silly game. But here's the thought experiment. What if Misters Ornstein and Mann had come back and said, the problem with this country is Democrats are weak and vacillating, and they're completely captive to their crazy hippie wing. Do you think that would be ignored on Meet the Press? Do you think that would not get huge that would be the cover of Time magazine?
Well, I agree with you to the extent, yeah, I think that might be true. I think what would get a faster booking than even that on Meet the Press would be a book about the extremists on both sides.
Oh no, that's the point.
Yeah, I think if you wrote a book comparing the Occupy movement to gun owning separatist movements, you know, the
secessionists.
Secessionists. If you compared it to Occupy movement and secessionists and made them equally balanced, being extremists on both sides that are destroying America.
But the point being
that would get booked right away.
Because that's the life's work of Thomas Friedman.
Yeah, exactly.
That is every fucking thing. I'm not kidding.
Yep.
The Olympics column, which I'll write about later today from David Brooks, is a centrist column. Is him saying, well, on the one hand, but on the other hand, there's one party that believes in big government and intervention and doesn't like business. And there's one party that believes in only business and destroys government. If only some reasonable person were to find, well, that's a lie. That's just a fucking lie. And David Brooks, every week in his column, lies to the American people and lies to the American public and continues to get a big fat paycheck for telling that lie. But you don't have to write a book about centrism. Centrism is the water in which these people swim. They don't even notice it anymore. This is just their natural environment.
Yeah.
But if you wrote a book saying the problem with this country is that crazy left-wing ideologues have destroyed our media and destroyed our ability to govern ourselves, that book would be on the fucking bestseller list tomorrow. And that those authors would be booked onto every major talk show.
They'd and the cover of that book would be beamed on the wall of Meet the Press. Yes. Absolutely.
But, but they said the Republicans are the problem, and David Gregory would rather chew his own arm off than ever utter that sentence. And if you want to go back and look at last week's Meet the Press for proof of this, there was a discussion about the unreasonableness, about the coarseness of our national political vocabulary and how vulgar and threatening and violence threatening it's gotten. And a woman, a Democratic congressman who was on there talking about gun control and how really it's gotten really terrifying because, you know, the amount of threatening coarse language being used to demonize people. Her, especially, anybody who thinks gun control is a good idea. And David Gregory, completely unprompted, because except of course for the shock collar he wears around his neck that is pressed by his boss every time someone strays into this territory about Republicans might be the problem, he leapt in and said, yeah, but you know, really, that's a bipartisan problem.
No, it isn't. And no one said no, it isn't.
And well, that's because he was the moderator.
Yeah.
And his show was suddenly in danger of blaming the Republicans for being assholes. And he can't. And the day that happens is the day he has to go on unemployment. So he leapt in like Neil Conan.
Yeah.
On NPR,
like
David Brooks in the New York Times, completely unprompted, and said, but really, the problem is both sides. And that.
And then changed the subject. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is the central lie of our media. And that's why I focus on it, because it's so clear that so many rich elite pricks have so much invested in keeping that lie alive and are so terrified, like Thomas Friedman, so fucking terrified when anybody pricks that balloon, even slightly, because they know that's the bubble, that's the media bubble. And when that collapses, all of them are out of work, and all of that sweet, sweet elite insider bullshit that they thrive on is gone, and they can't have that. So they keep lying and keep lying and keep lying, and they make sure nobody who might be a threat to the lie ever gets within microphone distance of telling the American public the truth.
Hey, Driftglass.
Yeah.
I have some good news.
What's the good news?
We are featured at Best of the Left this week.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? Jay at Best of the Left, who does just a Herculean task of combining clips from left-wing media and liberal media every week, featured a clip from one of our podcasts from June for the first time. So we're very grateful to him. Thank you very much, Jay. And thanks to Best of the Left for including us.
Thank you.
You can listen to our podcast for free at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, and at our Facebook page. And I'm Frances Langham on Facebook. If you want to follow me and friend me, I'll friend you back. We're on iTunes and through our fabulous app available at the iTunes Store. We're on the amazing Stitcher Radio, and I found out that Netroots Radio is actually running us twice a week. Netrootsradio.blogspot.com runs us 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time and 9 to 10 Eastern, but also from 1 to 2 a.m. Pacific Time. So if you've been watching Breaking Bad video for a few hours on Saturday night, and then you know, it's 1 in the morning and you need something to do, you can go over to netrootsradio.blogspot.com and listen to our podcast.
You know why, Blue Gal? Because
why?
We are the danger.
I don't want to do any spoilers on the Batman movie. We both enjoyed the Batman movie.
Yep.
But there is a scene in that movie where a man gets out of bed and leaves a woman lying there sleeping comfortably. Let's just put it that way.
And
I leaned over to you and said, he's got to go watch Breaking Bad DVDs.
I've got to catch up with you. This shit makes any sense.
Because that's the story of our lives.
Well, that's
did I just let people into our bedroom a little bit, Driftglass?
No. That's one of the many, many threads that make up the tapestry of our life.
You can contribute to our podcast at our website or by sending a contribution or snail mail to us at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. We live off of your donations, and I wanted to say that we got another cash in the envelope this week, and we don't encourage that. But Chicago style, somebody pops some cash in an envelope for us.
I really feel like a ward boss. I do. I don't know who I'm supposed to, you know, intimidate or threaten or
I don't think there's any quid pro quo except to thank them on the air because they don't put a return address on their
or name or anything.
Empty but envelope. Please. But thank you. We went immediately to the grocery store and bought dinner with that money. We did.
Seriously, we opened up the P.O. box. We opened the envelope like, holy shit, man.
We can go to the store. We can go buy food.
So thank you.
Cats,
thank you. The birds outside, thank you.
Oh, man. Well, and there are some listeners to our podcast who, you know, can't afford to feed the birds outside. And
No.
You guys are off the list. You are not. It's not your responsibility to support us. If you're unemployed or struggling financially, we do not count on you at all. This is our gift to you if you're struggling financially. That's what I want to say.
We get emails from lots of people who are in a similar situation, probably great, but we're hanging in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we get from people, I'm on unemployment, I'm on retirement, I'm on fixed income, and you know, I really feel bad. Don't feel bad. This is our gift to you. This seriously is our gift to you. Don't need to send us email saying you wish you could this or that. You're not on the hook at all.
Yep.
It's our pleasure.
Every week we post to our website and Facebook page an internet kitty. And this week's internet kitty is Isis. Isis likes to lounge on top of the desktop hard drive, either because it's warm or the fan is cool or it's humming. We don't know why. We are not going to inquire as to Isis's motives for sitting on the top of the desktop hard drive. There's a picture of Isis on our website and also at our Facebook page, and she's beautiful. If you would like to send us a picture of your internet kitty for future, and it's not even consideration, internet kitties will go up at the website.
Mm-hmm.
Send it to us at our email address, which is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure the subject line of your email is internet kitty so we don't lose your internet kitty. And everyone can write to us at that address. That goes to both of us automatically, that address. Again, it's proleftpodcast@gmail.com. We get really heartfelt emails from people letting us know the story of their political lives, how they've come to find our podcast, what it means to them, how long they felt isolated politically. It means a lot to us to hear those stories. We don't always share them on the air, but to know that we're not alone, it means a lot to us to hear from you how you've come to hear us and what it means to you and where you are. There's a lot of people who feel like they can't be liberals publicly. And to hear from you about these stories is really important to us. So thank you for writing and writing to us about anything. And like I said, we've gotten tips this week that have been awesome. Which we'll be using in future podcasts, and we're very, very grateful to you for your correspondence. So feel free to write us, but be aware that if you write us at either our P.O. box or our email address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise, and do let us know how you'd like us to identify you on the air. So Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, the Internet Kitties would like to sincerely apologize for Mitt Romney retroactively.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2012. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.